Are you in Tamar? But why?
It's a big area. It's a big area.
We got time.
Unless you have something specific, you know, particulars of the area.
Yeah. I have two specific questions.
Specific
questions. The first one is by Shayla, right? They just wait till Shayla grows up, right? But then she sees that he's not going to give her Shayla.
Yeah.
Is he just like stringing her along?
That's a good question. Did he go through the reversion?
Rashi.
What's Rashi say?
That she's not getting him.
He's not getting him.
It says, Shiloh Chayim Bedaito LaCLO.
Right.
He didn't really want to give her to him.
Right.
So, because Mukzegis Yizu, she can Musu on the Shiloh, right? Now the funny thing is that what I would want to know is that the other thing, she's a Kalanis, right?
Okay.
I mean, she was a Tzedekis apparently. So what does it mean she's Mosekis that her husband died? I mean, they died because they had Avonos, but you maybe didn't know that it was because of their Avonos. She was a Tzedekis, and besides, doesn't the Rambam say that the whole thing by Kalanis was just a psychological thing, that that's not really like a halacha that you that's not a halacha that like you, that like a woman like is really gonna kill, like she's a mukzakit to kill people.
Yeah. So
what's the whole thing? She's mukzakit to kill her husband? It's not murder.
You asked me now about kavanis. That's a separate question.
Well, I'm saying it's not that she's a kavanis. So what is she?
And, you know, it's like a sort of a separate question.
Well, I'm saying she's not a kavanis. So what is she?
I don't know.
What
are you saying?
Rashi's
saying that she's
Kalanis,
right?
I don't know. I mean, I can give you reasons why I think she's not, but maybe he is.
You'll give reasons why she's not? Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know. I don't know what Rashi's saying. He says she's Mukzekes, that she killed whoever.
I have to hear what the other questions are. I'm not going to spend the whole time on it. Just to simplify it, at least to hold you for the time being, you know, something that should be looked into. But, according to Rashi, this is just off the top, simple shot, he didn't know. It would seem that he really didn't know. But it's strange that two sons were dying. In a strange way, obviously, because that God killed them, so... That would, I guess, add to the, you know, it would be a strange phenomenon. Now, he didn't know the facts at that time. He didn't know. But you see, later on, he admits that he was wrong. But he says, start coming many. That she's righteous. He was right. He recognized he recognized that he was at fault in the matter. Okay, so that was a great thing that he could choose with. He recognized he made a mistake. But apparently, he didn't... You see, the thing is like this. If he wasn't going to, the question you could ask is that if he wasn't going to give up for a wife, for Shayla, so then he should have just removed her, you know, from the Zika, so to speak, whatever existed at that point, that he was not free because of the Yivam situation, as it existed at that point. Why did he string her along, as you said? That's a good question. And if he held that she was a kaplanet, again, I would say simply that it doesn't mean that he was convinced. It was sort of sometimes a person is caught in a trap, they're not sure, and he was suspicious. Now, there's no, that is to say, if there is the phenomenon, it would be that you don't know in what sense he looked at it that way. That it's psychological. But what if it's a psychological factor? That's a significant factor. If there's something about the character of a woman and the way she interacts that could lead a person who has a certain weakness, a certain disposition, you know, that the person could actually die, he didn't know what the thing was over here. He wasn't sure. I don't think he didn't know about the chayit of his sons. That he did not know about. So he probably thought that they were good people. And it doesn't seem that he condemned her, but rather because he did allow her, you know, to the second brother, heir, and then own him. But apparently he suspected her, that it could be, that there's something to do with her. There's some fact, let's say it was fake even, if he considered that they guys in faith. Yeah, but faith also has to do sometimes with your relationship to another person. And a person behaves differently when they're together with one person as opposed to another person. So it's a complicated situation. But it would seem that he sort of, you know, didn't do anything about it. Would seem. That's wrong, that he didn't take action, because, you know, sometimes the person just, he says he had some time. So sometimes the person does that. He doesn't really have an answer. What?
Amen?
People say that the widow was simply unsure what to do. And in that situation, he said, wait, I see you, I'll say love it is. He put her off. Now, I don't know exactly what the strategy was. Whether the strategy was simply to wait and see what developed. Or maybe she would get tired and she would leave and that would solve the problem. It's hard to know. But, that apparently is the way Rashi learned. And he was reluctant. But it wasn't just found that he was waiting for Shayla to grow up, but that he had a certain reluctance with regard to her, too. But it would appear, though, that it wasn't going to reach the point where he was completely ready to disregard her. Okay, let me get to another question.
Okay, Rebbe? Am I man?
Yes!
Okay, after Yosef interpreted the Star of Mashkin's dream, Yosef asked if he would mention something to Paro to get him out. But when he got out, he forgot.
Right.
So Rashi implies there was something wrong with Yosef's request, and that was the reason he was in prison for 2 more years?
Right.
What was wrong with the request? Because it seems like a rational thing to do, that he should do everything in his power to get out.
Good point. Actually, I can't pick that up. I don't mind to be reviewing it with you guys. Is that the table for the rest of the fellas?
Yeah.
Is that what the guys want to do?
Yeah. Do you want to hear the other question first?
Did they have any questions?
Do you have any questions?
Just more questions about Yehuda and Tamar.
What's the consensus?
Anyone?
Yeah. It's okay.
Wait, what's okay?
To do this one.
Okay.
What?
This is not my own ideas. Maybe my own, but you know, it's mixed in there. But actually, he has given shiur. He has just like an essay he wrote on this. You know, most of his writing. You want to consult it? I think it's a Muna, or it's part of another essay. Be tough on that. But I'll just address the question that you raised. Let me get the place.
Near the end of the parsha.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Right. The question is a question. It seems like the other thing is the correct thing, that a person is not, we just learned from the story of Yaakov won in terms of how to approach a situation of danger with the base of the three things. The classical approach is that a person can rely just on tequila, just on amuna, and he's got to do everything told in Shadwell. He did everything in his power in terms of diplomacy and even in terms of war. So a person can't just remove himself from the situation and just pray for miracles. Of course, unless that's the only option. That sometimes that's the only option. As I'll say, if you look at Chadam and Nachas al Tzav Shalodam, I yikir it's an arachni. That is to say that even if a person is the sword is on your neck, you're about to be executed, you should not have to give up hope. You must follow. Yeah, because that's in a situation where there's nothing else to do. But there are situations where a person can just rely on tefillah. But if there's something that you can do, then you can't just rely on tefillah and negate your own responsibility. Okay? So, and also it's interesting, you have that very, very controversial Ramban, when Avram went down to Mitzrayim because of the Ra'av. So, big machlokas over there. Rashi says that this was an Yisrael. That is to say that God was testing him to see whether he'd be Mahar, Acham Yidosav Shalter Zbarachu. That is, he was questioning God's way. Because here it is, he gave up everything, he left his land, he he followed God's directions to a strange land and so forth, and as soon as he gets there, all of a sudden, there's a battle. So, yeah, like most people would be upset. Not the way it should be. So he was tested. And he passed the test, obviously, that he didn't expect any. He didn't try and figure out God's game plan, so to speak, quote unquote. And whatever it was, he always had faith in God, that God he would follow the path, no matter what the particulars. He wasn't concerned with the particulars, how it would manifest itself in terms of his imagination. However, there's an interesting Ramban actually criticizes him for leaving the land, and he makes a whole big thing out of that there was a punishment for him, or sentence and so forth. If it was the wrong thing to do, they should have had a Muna and should have stayed in the land. It's a very difficult Ramban, and there are some who say that it's not even an authentic Ramban. I think I saw something from Rav Moshe. I mean, not that he says that it's not authentic, but that it's very difficult. It's because of this basic principle, it's a very fundamental principle, that is that, ain't so for the honey. Even in terms of the rest of the world, big mitzvah, however big as a mitzvah, so to live there, if a person is in danger and he can't sustain himself, so he has to leave. Alright, all that by way of introduction. Therefore, it would seem that Yosef acted appropriately. Because Yosef, was sold into slavery, tough situation, and then he rose to power in the house of the master, and then he had the incident with Agent 45, the false accusation, and he was thrown in jail again. And again, he's not crushed by the circumstances. It's the case, he's not crushed, even in jail. And he wins the favor of the authorities. And then he takes advantage of the opportunity to interpret the dreams. Now, interestingly enough, there's another interesting Ramban in this case, while we're on the subject. Other thoughts come to mind. Did Yosef act correctly in offering to interpret the dreams of these individuals? Let me pose that question to you. Did he act correctly? I hadn't thought of it that way.
Why would it be something which would be wrong? It's a neutral activity. Why can't he, it just...
Neutral, there's nothing one way or the other.
Yeah.
Well, so you mean he just felt like doing it?
He saw the guy was upset, so he
gave him a hand. He didn't have to do it either. He's saying it's there either way.
Right.
Completely neutral. There was no obligation to do it.
It seemed like he was trying to ingratiate himself with them, and that was part of the whole thing. You know, he saw that these are powerful people, and he saw they were bothered by their dreams, and if he could interpret their dreams for them, so then he would be able to...
Let me ask you, was it a good idea to offer to interpret the dreams? Was that a good idea? A good thing to do?
Yeah, I would say yes.
Okay, let me ask
you one more thing. Because it would get him in with the people who are more powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to have friends in prison.
Yeah, but you're missing the point of my question, though.
Doesn't the Pasuk say, Halo l'Elohim Pitronim?
Yeah.
That aren't the dreams the interpretations for God? That he should be the one to do them?
Right, so therefore what?
Therefore a man should involve himself in interpretation.
That's what he means. The whole Elohim Pitronim means interpreters. God has interpreters. That's a good point, though. It's not saying that man should leave it alone. It means if you want to know the truth, it comes from God. The dream itself is really prophetic. So if it's prophetic, it comes from God. And therefore, only those people who have this association, this relationship, this connection, so to speak, with God that enables them to understand the language of the dream can interpret it. That's what he's saying. Not that it means that God, what do you mean? So God, how's God going to interpret it for you? And they have to do through a certain medium, through a certain individual. That's what he means. He's even referring to himself. That there are people that are into phenomenon, and there are people that are endowed with the insight. He's not begging, he's not trying to get the peg, but, you know, if you're a doctor, you have to let people know that, you know, that there are medical people that have skills. Basically, that's what he's saying. Hello, Tim Fitzronin. He's not taking the credit, though. It's not saying, well, he's not bragging, like, hey, I can do that. He's saying that the way God set up the universe, there's a creator, and he set up the universe in a certain way, and there is such a phenomenon, and there are people that could tap into that. So it's a humble way of making a big point, so to speak. Okay? I'm referring to a different issue. You see, the thing is, it's typical sometimes. In retrospect, it seems like everything that the people in the color do always works out right, so we never stop and question. Whether it always seems so pushy. Everything. Like Abraham goes and he fights a war against the biggest coalition in the world and daring rescue and saves both. And the whole thing seems like a big deal. You never stop and think, like, you know, why did he do it in the first place? Would you have done that? I mean, does it make sense to just go because it's great to have all this loyalty? But to embark on such a venture. Now, of course, after the fact, it's great heroics, but Mechatzila. I have a share on that. I'm not going to that. I'm just pointing out that when we read a lot of these stories, we don't go into certain aspects of it because we're looking at it after the fact. So, Abraham, of course, he always wins, so what's the big deal for him? But that's, you know, it's not so perfect.
Yes. I understand by Abraham, he's putting himself into a very dangerous situation, but what's the danger of interpreting a dream?
Danger? Well, I'm posing that to you. Before I show you the Ramban, I'm giving you a chance to speak. So I'll give you about 35 seconds.
I think it was a dangerous move, because you're messing with people's hopes.
Talk it out.
And if it wouldn't come true, so then he would really get the worst of it.
Yeah, especially with regard to one.
Yeah, but he knew it was going to come true.
What?
He knew it was going to come true.
1 second. Let's put the question out for a second, you know?
Okay.
Let the question out for a second. There's danger over here. The danger is correct. That's Daniel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the danger is correct. Maybe the danger, it's a danger all around. The danger, if he had two conclusions. One is that one of them would be saved. Now, and the other one would be hung. If he was wrong, he could face big trouble. In which case would he face the biggest trouble? Not in the case, I don't think he'd face the biggest trouble if he tells one guy he's going to go out and that guy got hung, would not be as bad. Because the guy's dead, right? Yeah, the thing is, I mean, maybe you could argue that he told him that in 3 days he would be free. Let's say he was wrong on the time asking. So he was wrong on that one. That's, you know, it's hard to put yourself into a particular situation, what the particulars are. But that guy would have been dead. Yeah, but you know, you don't know what the fact is. He's got other friends in the jail and connections and so forth. They would have been out. They could have been out to get Yosef or whatever. Did he harm him? Look, it wouldn't have been good politically. But the other case would have been. The other case would have been worse if he was wrong with the Sarah Olsen. And he told him that he's going to die in 3 days, and let's say he was wrong and it didn't come about that way. Then, boy, that guy would have been out to get him, don't you think?
Yes.
Now the question is, why did he get involved in this whole thing? It is risky. And of course, I know the other thing is going to say that, he knew, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not the case. It's not that cautious. You can always make... It's not that a simplistic thing. Like, you know, I'm a Zoom interpreter. Boom, boom, boom. I open up my computer. I plug in, Nebula.com. I get the answer. It doesn't work that way. There's an element, first of all, he offered to do it even before he knew what the dream was. And it's a chachma. You know, like it's a chachma. You see the way he interpreted... It's not so fuzzy. There's an element, it's an interesting kind of a dream.
But apparently, if he gave him an interpretation, he was pretty certain that he was going to be right. I mean, it seemed like he was in doubt as to the answer.
Pretty certain. That's the question. That is the question. Is it that puppet that, you know, you're coming to me, and I have the book, I have the dictionary, I just look it up. So, if I have a dictionary, if you look at it that way, if I have a dictionary, and somebody needs to know a word, and I even have no problem. I just open the dictionary. It doesn't require any brains on my part. I don't think it's that way. These things are interesting because there seems to be a certain element of ordinary, so to speak, chachma, in terms of, you see from the dream itself. You can see from the dream itself a certain amount. I don't know whether it's purely deductions that he made from the dream itself, or whether it's real nevuah phenomena. It seems to be a combination that there's definitely elements of the dream that point towards the murderous intentions of the things that you look at the dream. Because the dream itself, so to speak, indicates that the Sahara open. The Sahara open what's his dream that
bird eating the bread on his head?
Yeah. The birds are eating the bean on his head. I'm sorry, the birds are eating the bread, the basket, right?
Yeah.
Let me just take a look at it to review. It's also, everything is fascinating and it's interesting to study to go through it. You can see a lot just from the dreams itself, even without being a nubby, without having the ability to interpret the rule. First of all, who's willing to tell the dream first? That itself is a factor. The other one is afraid, and it says that he told Puzzah because he saw that the interpretation was for good. So he was hoping that his interpretation would be for good too. But otherwise, he was reluctant.
Right. He was reluctant because he really knew that
he knew that he was guilty.
He was going to get that.
Hold on a second, let me just see. Yeah, the, that's after, you see, he interprets the dream of the Sahara Mashkin, and then he makes his request. Then it says that the Sahara Open saw that the, interpretation was told. And he said, I too in my dream. See, I too, God. He wants the same result, the same position. There were three baskets on my head, and in the top basket there was all of Pharaoh's bread, the food, and the birds were eating from the basket on top of my head. Alright? So, as opposed to the first dream, you can see in the first dream that the great dreams, obviously, the dreams reflect the person's deeper desires. You see that there was a vine, and on the vine there were three branches, and you see the blossoming, it brings forth the shoots and the sprouted buds, and the crust was ripened and became grapes. That's because you see, that shows his care, his concern, a person that really enjoys what he's doing. So he sits with everything, every aspect of the process of making the wine. He looks over, then Pharaoh's cup was in his hand, and he took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup. All of this shows that he really enjoys what he's doing. And he placed the cup upon Pharaoh's hand. So that indicates, again, it's all on a superficial level, but you can see it, that indicates a certain element in his personality that he wants to serve. In the other case, you can see all the resistance that the baskets are on his head and the birds eating the bread off of the basket. It shows you complete resistance to being subservient to power. So, alright, to what extent was it, that's a separate question, to what extent were the dreams, did Yosef employ chachma? Well, what I mean by chachma is the chachma that, you know, a person who's very psychologically attuned could use. That is to say that aside from Yosef's ability to interpret the Nevuah aspect, a highly intelligent individual whose brilliance in psychology could arrive a great deal just by the content of the dream, the elements, of how the people are presenting it. You know, he's there talking to the people, that also the body language, so to speak, the fact that the butler was more willing to share the dream shows that he has nothing to hide. The baker comes next. There's a lot there. What does that mean? But there are certain elements that really you can't attribute to that. For example, the phenomenon of 3 days, which he says this, you know, the three branches and so forth, they represent 3 days. Well, I mean, I guess it's been suggested that perhaps Yosef knew that there was an investigation going on. But it's hard for me to conclude that he was able to make the prediction of 3 days. There's always, I don't think that it's only a matter of the ordinary dream, good dream interpretation. Because good dream interpretation can take you so far. That is to say that a person who was insightful, who was listening, we're reading the dreams, we could, and if we didn't know anything else, we could possibly come to this conclusion. But I don't think that you would venture to make your prediction that this would happen or that would happen, because even if you would say, well, yeah, there's an investigation going on, and so on and so forth, and it looks like to me like the butler is the guilty guy, apparently something happened. They were both running to his power cuts of Alavoda. I mean, Yosef, we're about to assume that Yosef knew all of that. He knew the news behind it. And he put them in jail until he investigated the matter. There was some kind of a conspiracy in the palace, obviously. And Pharaoh at that point didn't know who was guilty. So it had to do with these types of servants. Maybe there was an attempt to poison him. So that would make sense. You throw them all in jail and you investigate. And so Yosef was pretty confident that this person was innocent and the other person was guilty. Okay. But I would not make the, I wouldn't be that sure to make these predictions. Because you know that sometimes an innocent person is condemned. Sometimes a guilty person gets off. It's not that simple. So it would seem, I don't know how far you could go with that, to say that Yosef was convinced that he was the innocent one and he was the guilty one. Yeah, that could be true, but how do you know what's going to happen with the intrigue in the court? You know, any trial in America today, whatever it is, guilty people get off the hook, innocent people can be found guilty. You can be confident that this guy's innocent or guilty, but once he's in the system, once there's an investigation, you don't know what all the factors are. So it would seem that there was more, that there was elements of the prophetic involved as well. However, clearly the question arises that the Yosef had to be very, very confident. There's a danger of making a mistake over here. There's a danger of making a mistake. A serious danger. I don't think it's a minor danger. Because you're dealing with very powerful people. And as we said, if you make the wrong move, if you, as we said, both mistakes could have very bad consequences. It seems that the worst of the two would be the case of the baker. That the baker, if he was exonerated, then he really wanted to kill Yosef. Let's face it, I mean, you're not dealing with philosophers over here. You're dealing with, that's the way these people operate in the world of politics. And he was a conspirator. He was prepared to kill the king. So he'd get rid of Yosef in a hurry. So the question is, what do you need this whole thing for? Now, I'm contesting what the Yosef was saying, that it's that simple. It's parshish, I mean, he's got a clear cut. I don't think it works that way. I think that there's always a danger. I mean, you've got to use your chokmah, and, you know, it's like when you're giving advice in a high-powered situation to a businessman who's counting on you, you take it as an element of risk. But people may decide to do it or whatever, because that's their job, or they stand to make a lot of money, but they also stand to lose. A lot of these firms, investment firms, you take all the money and you know, put them in the wrong funds, boom, promise to interpret the dream. Now, take a look at the Ramban. Ramban raises this point. It's a crucial point in this story.
You're right. Okay, so it seems like there is some, you know, chokhmah involved interpreting the dream, and it's not 100%. I mean, you don't know 100%. But still, apparently, I mean, he believed that interpreting them correctly would ingratiate him with a couple people who are powerful, and one of whom who's about to get returned to serving Paro. And maybe, you know, he was sure enough that it's, you know, he could spend forever in prison. I mean, I didn't think anyone was even going to remember him. So it's worth it to take a chance sometimes when you're in a situation that looks desperate. I mean, he was pretty sure that he could interpret it correctly, you know, and then it made it worth the risk.
Take a look at, well, let's see, you have the Ramban is on Zion, Ben Zion. Esau. The story says that that both of these ministers were in the jail with where Yosef was. Now Yosef goes to Bachem and shows that Esau. So besides the Bachem appointed Yosef, so to speak, to minister to them, to be in charge of their needs. That's the Ashkacha brought Yosef into contact with these two individuals. So Yeshua tells them. See, he was a Meshuri. And, you know, after a certain time, there's the elements by Yu Yom, I'm interested. But he mentions that they were, it doesn't have to mention that they were in jail for a while. But apparently a certain relationship was established that was necessary. Because if Yosef was a total stranger, they wouldn't speak to him. Also, I mean, like, Yosef, you see, Yosef exhibits a certain familiarity with them. That, he sees that they're downcast. They wake up in this very bad mood. And he's not afraid to ask, what's the problem? Okay. Then, that's involved. Vayavo Alei and Yosef Baboka. Yosef came to Vayavo Sandhiyam Zalachim. They were upset. Then it says, "Vayishal es tzivisei paro, asher ishal b'mishmar beis adon avlein, madu p'necha norm haya." So he asked the ministers of paro that were with him in jail, in the house of his master, saying, why do you have such a sad face today? Take a look at Ramban. Ramban comments on the fact that it says, "Vayishal es tzivisei paro." Why does he have to repeat in this context that he asked the ministers of paro? We already know that. That's already been described. So the Siddur simply says, Vayishal Otsam. Take a look at Ramban. How you roar, you say, Yomar HaKadosh. Vayishal Otsam Leymor. It would have been appropriate for the prophet to simply say that he asked them. Avol Harer. But it, well, you know, it went at glance. That is to say, unnecessarily mentioned, again, for reason. That there are ministers. Kiroto will stop there, it's Shvach Yosef. It wants to tell you about the merit of Yosef. Shoya Nar, he was a youth. Ever, he was a slave. Vishar, which means son, Gedolim. And he asked two great ministers. Named the Beit Adono, Asher Sona Oso. And they were in the house of his master, Sulayim. Vaya Kalechod, Yoko, Mitzavos, Yosef says, Rosho Me'ela. And each one had a power to have him killed. Well, Pachad Mayhem, but he wasn't afraid. The Lishal also, he wasn't afraid to ask them. The Lamar Lehem, Daito the Pitro, and to tell his opinion in the interpretation. Here's the crucial element, the next three words. He Batach the Chachmata. He was Batuach the Chachmata. He was confident in his Chachmata. To Ilu Nilu crucial than man. That is a simple thing. All right, you're safe, guys. And here it sounds like a very fortuitous thing. You know, these guys have a dream, oh, no problem. But that's no, it's no big deal for Yosef to enter it, and here he's got the opportunity. According to Ramban, and based upon the prophet, this is a, this represents a tremendous step forward, so to speak, in the development of Yosef. Tremendous step forward, because the whole problem began, I mean, the fact that Yosef finds himself in this situation, goes back to a very serious misjudgment. Even though he was a great chacham at the age of 17, and even though he received the dreams of the book. So it's an amazing kind of phenomenon that, again, it's not so precious. But even if you have the power to interpret the Nebuah, you can get yourself into a lot of trouble. And it's kind of similar, too, isn't it? What was the mistake that he made when he was 17? How was it spoken to you?
He told over the dreams to his brother.
Ah, was that a reason? Was that Chachma?
No.
Wow.
That was stupid.
Oh, okay, I don't like to use those kinds of words. Because we speak respectfully.
Yes.
But, serious mistake. How do you reconcile such a phenomenon? That on the one hand, he has the chachma that he can interpret dreams. On the other hand, as a result of this, he gets himself into huge trouble. Huge trouble. The truth of the matter is that of all the different things he did, the Diva, he broke the Diva, and so forth, that is true. I mean, I have to remind that, the development of the hatred goes through a process of development, it's a significant hatred. But, it wasn't because of the Diva, that just got things going. They looked at him in a certain way. But it was because of the Chalamos. He made Bala Chalamos fall. Let's kill him, and Veneer Maria Chalamos. The thing that really triggered them was the dream. But you just put that on your list of questions. So why would they kill a person for having dreams? If they didn't believe the dream is the truth, so what's the problem? That's a separate question. I've dealt with that, and, nevertheless, no one can deny that he made a serious, serious misjudgment of the entire situation, not the least of which was the insistence upon telling them the dream. It made matters worse. And then he made that mistake twice. He insisted on telling the second dream as well. And every time they heard a dream, they hated him more. Until, that's it, the fate was sealed by the dream. But you see that these things are not so simple. The whole idea, even though he had chachma in the area, but in other areas he didn't have chachma. There was a certain element, which we have to be very careful, we're talking about Yosef, but just descriptively, there was an element of immaturity, obviously. And whatever the emotions were that caused them to make these serious misjudgments. You know, Rashi says he had vanity and overestimation of himself and all that. All these factors are very, very significant. You see from the story of Yosef that this is a fundamental, that in order for a person to be perfected, even in the area of Chachma, he's got to be a master of all the emotions. Because even if he is a genius, or Yosef is a genius, and to the extent that you're able to interpret the ruler, there's still imperfection. And as a result of those imperfections, he's brought a tremendous calamity upon himself. And suffered tremendously. And the struggle was with him, of course. But everything could have been destroyed. He was older than Evan. But now, what's Ramban pointing at over here? Ramban is making a huge, huge point. Alright, I'll give you 45 seconds.
Hey, what are you coming up with? This is a very important point.
Ed?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, what's the answer?
It seems like he was overly sure of himself.
Yeah, he was overly sure of himself?
Yeah, that's what he was willing to say.
He was overly sure of himself. Yeah, he was overly sure of himself in the first instance. In the first instance. That is, well, I mean, I don't like the word overly. Overly implies that it was not appropriate. Here you're saying it was inappropriate. Are you saying here too he was suffering from the same defect?
Yeah.
Ah. You changed your position like 180 degrees. You started off by saying you're saying simple thing. Of course you interpret the dream.
Well,
the kind of question whether it's the right thing to do.
You gotta, you know, think about it as it goes along.
Okay, I appreciate that.
So,
But that's not what the Ramban is saying. That's not what the Ramban is saying, in my opinion. I don't think that's what it means. Any other opinions besides Joseph?
He did the same activity, but he did it with Hoffman this time.
Yeah. You see, at this point in time, everything that happens to Yosef is really under the Ashkafa. Everything is under the Ashkafa. You can see that in the public, that Kay pointed it out, but you say, hey, wait. When Yaakov sent him to see how the brothers were doing, he got lost. So in terms of the natural course of events, then nothing would have happened because he got lost, he would have come back. Then it says that he found a person. And Rashi says that that's a Malach, that was a Malach, an angel. Now whatever you want, whatever an angel specifically, what form it takes, it means what Rashi pointed out is that that was Hashkacha. So it was the Hashkacha that he should be... That, you know, that he should find his brothers and whatever would happen to him. So that's all, everything that happens is under the Ashkafa. And the underlying objective, the objective of the Ashkafa, as far as Yosef is concerned, Yosef was destined for greatness. That was in the dream. But in order to attain the greatness, he had to go through a process of overcoming his weaknesses. There's no such thing as a naturally perfect individual. That's what this part shows you, that's the defect. Even great people have defects. In the Yaakovinu, the Yisrael of is a Joseph Nicol Bonham. He made the Kunim Law, the Ashwalk Son of Parkin. Because all say it was a big mistake. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to show favoritism. That was the underlying root cause. So everybody has defects, and everybody has to work on their defects. This is what the Parsha teaches you. And you can't just rely on your fucking. You know, that's a very strong emotion, especially when people are young, especially yeshiva guys. But then the whole focus is on getting smarter and smarter and smarter. And you sort of have the idea, but if I could learn, if I could know all the answers, then I'm invulnerable, so to speak. A certain intellectual invulnerability. A person is searching for that. You know, the answer book. That's sort of why we tend to look at people like Yosef and say, well, he got all the answers. What's the big deal? Of course he gets up and dream. You see the importance of course, obviously, you got to put your energy into Hoffman, developing your mind, learning the knowledge of it. Can't be overemphasized, but you cannot ignore the emotional. A person will be very, very limited by emotional defects. I know that people do not look at it that way. They think, they may not express it consciously, but they think that, no, they can bypass. They can compensate for certain emotional defects by learning more and getting more knowledge. But that's not the case. It will catch up with you, and you're going to be limited in terms of your appreciation of Hoffman, in terms of your behavior, and even in terms of your knowledge, you're going to make mistakes. The greatest genius will make mistakes because to be a genius in certain areas, when the emotions are not interfering with the objective, but that's not always going to be. So that's why you see, like, billion people can get caught up in the biggest mistake. Because in certain areas, the emotions take over. All of the events that occur to Yosef, from the time that he meets up with the brothers, and they throw him into the pit, and they take him out, and then they sell him, and everything is being done for the sake, because why? Why? long story short, and it's something you should go through in specifics, but everything that's happening to him is happening to give him the opportunity to be forced to confront his imperfections and to work on them and to overcome them. That's why, because I'll say that he wasn't just, that's bad enough. He's a breakdown of the ego, for example. The sense of being superior to the others. So this is a breaking down of the ego. He's looking for more of a breakdown than to be sold as a slave. But you see, it's even more than that, because it says that the Yishmaelim sold him to the Binyanim, and they sold him to the Binyanim, you know, like he was sold many, many times. That's more of a breakdown, like a piece of chattel. It's bad enough to just go into slavery. And then you see, even that he did. He wasn't crushed by it. He wasn't crushed by the events. You see his greatness. That the spirit wasn't destroyed. Apparently that's what the brothers thought. That would be enough to ruin him, because most people would be ruined. Once the spirit is gone, you're finished. However, that wasn't the case. And, you know, he accepts the reality of the situation. This is the reality of the situation, and he's able to really function and even to grow and to prosper. And it says that his master recognized his ability. That means to say that he was functioning, he was using all of his knowledge and his chokhmah, and he made a tremendous impression. And it didn't break his relationship with God, because it said that the master said that God was with him. And Rashi points out that Shem Hashem screwed his fist. But he always talks about his relationship to God, his philosophy. He's always talking about his philosophy. And his impression. But interestingly enough, he was thought, okay, so now he's rising to the top. He kept getting promoted, until he was in complete charge of everything. So he had the Ishan the Ummah. And the Potiphar didn't oversee anything. A complete, not just confident in his knowledge, but he trusted him. He gave over his entire portfolio to him. He doesn't have a check, the book. And then he has another downfall. So Rashi points out over there that the public says that the wife,
after most tremendous successes of Yosef, a number of pushing. That they're on a test, final perfectly. It shows how he was promoted step by step by step until Yazov Kolash Alobi Ad Yosef. He left everything that he had in the hands of Yosef. Well, Yosef, he didn't check anything. That's it. It's the food that he ate, basically. Vahi Yosef, Yosef Tawar, Yosef Mara. And Yosef was his face so out was good looking. What does he have to mention that for? What does he have to mention that for? That he was good looking. Handsome. He has a Yosef. There's the connection. There's the connecting one. That Yosef in spite of all the success led to his downfall. Because then she began to say, then she looked at him, probably as long as he was a slave. She was an attraction. Well, all of a sudden he became good looking. Well, I mean, you do see that that's a very attractive thing. About powerful people in position of authority, powerful people are very attractive. But by Thomas Shechva, you mean. So that's the beginning of his next downfall. It's interesting, if one can ask, so what did he do to deserve this? And you see, we'll take that up separately, his reaction. Seems that he was, the Rambam says that this is a real Kiddush Hashem. He says that a real Kiddush Hashem is when someone refrains from doing an Aveira, or he does a mitzvah, for no other purpose in the world, no ulterior purpose, except because of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, the fear of God, the love of God, like Yosef HaTzadik. Which means that Yosef had an opportunity over here. He could have been seduced and whatever, and he refrained from sin. So what was going on over here? What brought him into the situation? So there's an interesting Rashi. Now he knows that you say Torah, and Rashi says, Even Gerard Hatzman Moshe, once he realized that he was in power, this is still Ochel Veshosa from the south of the power. See, Rashi traces it back to the original description of Yosef. Unar. And he was an ar, and Rashi says that he's vain. He has this problem of vanity. Rashi says the same thing, that he was concerned about his appearance, coming to hair, his look. Rashi traces us back to the same idea. But it would seem, the way Rashi is describing it, that element of vanity had been cured. Because, well, as he's saying, once he assumed the position of power, he began to revert back to the, self-indulgence, the vanity. Apparently, he had overcome that. Well, I guess he didn't overcome it completely, but at least, once he was broken down, once he was sold, once he was afraid, he lost that vanity, that concern for his looks. It was meaningless. So once he began to regain the power, apparently there was a resurgence of that emotion. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, God said, Avicham is Abel, your father is in mourning, the Atzim Asaltel Sarefa, and the Megara Bechaz Ado. Your father is in mourning, and you're interested in your own vanity, your own look, I'm going to stick the bear upon you. Right. We don't have too much time to analyze all the particularities surrounding this. But to me, it indicates that the downfall that he experienced in the Tzion, because one can ask the question, if everything is under the Ashtaka, so what did he do to deserve this? He didn't bring it on. It doesn't seem he did anything. And to the contrary, he decided. He refused. Play in mind. He refused. And everything worked out, though. There was one day, there was nobody around, and she was there, and she tried to seduce him, he tried to run away, she grabbed the garments, and everything worked out against him, and he winds up in jail. So what did he do to deserve it? Here's Rashi's interpretation, it would seem to me to fit in, that everything that was happening to him in the Mitzrayim was due to the Ashkafa. And the objective in this case of the Ashkafa was to put him in situations where he would have to confront his true nature, the emotional side, the defects, the weaknesses, and to overcome them. So apparently, he had not completely, the tumor was not complete as a result of the Mechira and the fact that he was in Eved and that he began as a nobody in the house of Potiphar. Of course, a significant amount of tumor had been done, and he rose to power and prominence and so forth. But the elements of Yifetor, Yifetor is telling you, according to Rashi, it's bringing you back to the original problem. The original was a powerful emotion. The original issue of the vanity had not been entirely overcome. It had been suppressed, but it had not been entirely uprooted. And therefore, God arranged the circumstances. I'm not getting into the particularities of it, but that was necessary. The fact that he found himself in jail was not just to set up the chain of circumstances that would bring him to the attention of Pharaoh. Of course, that was the ultimate objective of the Ashkafa, that he would be in a position of leadership and the relationship with Pharaoh, which would sustain the Jews, the whole world during the time of the famine, and so on and so forth. That's true, but this wouldn't have happened unless he was deserving of this, because that relationship with Pharaoh could have come about in a different way. So this is multifaceted. There's many different levels, many different purposes. And as far as he was concerned, it was an essential component in his development. And this was in this phase when he was in prison as a result of the incident with the wife of Potiphar. That's when he really worked on himself in a manner which really uprooted the emotion. And I think that's what the Ramban is saying, that the story of Yosef with the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ofen is explaining to you, providing you with the basis why really that was it. Now the objective of the Ashkafa, by and large, has been overcome, except for the one mistake that he makes, which we're not going to have time for today. That's where we started out, interestingly enough. The fact that he put his faith in the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ofen. We will have to hold that off maybe till next week, it's fine. But what the Ramban is saying is that insofar as he had defects, he had emotional defects, which caused him to make mistakes, political mistakes, in the realm of dealing with other people, which is an integral component of his leadership. To be a leader, it's not just enough to have this abstract chachma, but you have to know how to deal with people. And the mistakes that you make in dealing with people, to a large extent, stem from the vanity, the overestimation of the self. And you see that in spite of the fact that he was a genius at 17, but he still was not emotionally perfected. And because he was not emotionally perfected, he made very serious mistakes. Now, he was different. He was batuach b'chachmato. He was not a... Batuach b'chachmato means that he wasn't affected by any kind of emotion. There was a different type of confidence, a confidence which stems from his knowledge of the reality, not from extraneous emotions. And sometimes a person has confidence, but it's a false sense of confidence because it's coming from his ego. Especially what the Pirkei Avos have been assuming of din. So you should be patient in din. Which means that a person shouldn't just go with his first thought. Sometimes a person, boom, I know the answer, that's it. Intuitively, because he feels. He has a certain confidence. That's the wrong sense of confidence. That's the sense of confidence that stems from a person's egotism. Because he thinks he's a genius and he always has to know the answer. No, the assuming means that you think it through, you put aside that emotion, and think it through, and think it through, and think it through until you're confident, but that confidence is based upon the reality of genuine understanding. That's the hallmark of a great chacham, and that, he has to have the courage to act on that chacham. That's what the Ramban is saying over here. That when a person is a batuach b'chachmato, and he knows the area, and he understands it, then he acts on his chacham. And that's what Yosef did over here. I'm not saying that there's no element of risk. You can't live a life that's free of risk. But, yeah, it's true, like the Yosef said before, that there's benefits. There could be benefits, but there could be dangers. But if you don't know what you're doing, you're best off leaving things alone. I'm trying to show you that he wasn't taking a crazy risk. And I'm not saying that there was no element of risk. But he acted like a person who was batuach b'chachmato. And I would say that's the same thing. I take one of the factors with Abraham when he decided to go on that raid. It wasn't just a crazy wild thing. But he had if you listen to the show, you'll see there was plenty of riots, and he knew what he was doing, and he was batuach b'chachmato. Just to conclude, I raised the same question, the same basic question that we raised on Yosef over here. Why did he undertake something which is so risky? That we raised with Avraham, why did he undertake something so risky? I raised that question with regard to David, Amela. You remember the story when everybody was paralyzed by the fear of Goliath. The whole camp, these are mighty warriors, Shaul and Yonatan. And he was such an intimidating individual. The whole camp was paralyzed. There was nobody that was prepared to fight. By the way, it doesn't mean I have written things on this, I've given share on it. It doesn't mean to say that they were afraid, that Shaul and Yonatan were afraid of death, but they were great warriors, and they put their lives on the line. And it means that confirms my point, that they didn't see how they could beat him. That's a very important point, by the way. You see, David HaMelech, in his eulogy, Shaul and Yonatan, he eulogized them, what great warriors they were. That, they fought great battles. The truth of the matter is that Shaul, on the last battle, he knew that he was going to die in that battle, but he went out to fight anyway. So then one can ask, why were they so afraid to fight Goliath? So what's the worst that could happen? Is that they'll lose? Well, look, in all the wars you fight, you might lose. I prove from there that a person, they weren't afraid of death, they were afraid of the defeat, and the defeat would mean the whole destruction of the camp. In other words, you can't go out and fight when it's crazy. Like the Zealots in the time of the Bayashani, we discussed that last week. And the Elkan and Zakai couldn't control them. They were like Zealots. Even though that was hopeless. It means to say that there was nobody, there was no warrior of Israel who, according to their understanding, had any possibility of beating him. And if they went out and he just were defeated, it would be a tremendous catastrophe to call yourself. But you can't just go out because you're not afraid of dying. That's craziness. And you see, also, when David, I'm not going through the whole story now, when David approaches and he sees what's happening, and he finds his way to Shaul, at first Shaul rejects him. Even though David wouldn't go out and fight him, which means that David was prepared to die. Well, but Shaul was concerned. I mean, why should I send you out? You're going to get killed. He had to prove to him. Anyway, he tells him the story that two different occasions, he was a shepherd, he was guarding the sheep. And on one occasion, I hope you're familiar with the story, with the bear and the lion. And on one occasion, a bear stole a sheep. And on another occasion, a lion. And in each case, he chased after it, and he grabbed the lion by its beard, so to speak. He saved the sheep, and he killed the lion. It sounds like a crazy thing to do. First of all, no one starts up with a lion. You don't start up with an animal and it has its prey and it's about to eat. And that type of thing. So, the question I raised is, I mean, so it's very nice. But does it make sense? Are we supposed to follow that? Just to save the sheep, you risk your life, you fight a lion? Well, to make a long story short, I think the Rambam mentions that when he did those things, he had Ruach HaKodesh. The Ruach HaKodesh is not in the Ruach. But I think it's in line with this idea that we don't know the particulars, but David knew what he was doing. He was but Ruach HaKodesh. And apparently, he was adept at these types of things. If he knew, he was totally confident that he would be able, he needs to go in there, because he has to, sometimes a person has no choice. If their child is like kidnapped by an animal, whatever, he'll go fight an animal, he'll go and fight the bear, but he's not stopping and thinking. That's a different type of an emotion. That wasn't the case over here. But rather, he was but and once he convinced Shaul of that, he had to convince Shaul of that. Once Shaul was convinced that this was a unique type of an individual who was able to adapt to the situation, he had this tremendous, not just courage, but a courage which was founded in Chachma, then he allowed him to go. You see also the story over there indicates that, because first he gave him his own armor, his suit of armor, and David tried it on, and he wasn't comfortable, it was too heavy, whatever, and he discarded it. And then he devised his own personal plan as to how to fight Goliath, which shows that he wasn't intimidated by the authority of Shaul. Anyway, all of these cases, in my opinion, are stated because this is the ultimate perfection of an individual. And that Yosef had attained over the year, expressed by the fact that he confidently offered these prominent individuals that he would interpret their dream in spite of all of the dangers that were involved. This shows his perfection because he now is operating purely in line with Batruch Bechachmoso, which means that he had identified all of the various emotions that had affected him when he was younger. He had overcome them, he had isolated them, he separated them, and now he was operating on the realm of perfection. Okay, I think we'll have to conclude here, fellas. Hello?
Yes.
Okay, have a good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
All right, take care.